What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
For decades, he's been the king of Memphis.
It's good to be king of your own little town.
You want to see the king? You think anybody would pay to come down and see a sawed-off runt? Bug-eyed Bill Dundee? No, they come to see me, baby.
King of them all, right here it is, baby. The greatest wrestler that ever lived and ever will step into a ring. You're looking at him, and I am the champion.
And you may be familiar with his work in WWE, too.
I'll show you who the real king of the World Wrestling Federation is. It's the most electrifying move. It's Sports Entertainment Today. Oh, the people devil!
For 50 years, he's been known all over the world as one of wrestling's biggest stars. And now, he's decided to share all of his favorite stories from his 50 years in wrestling with you.
Tell me a story.
Why don't you put your false teeth in backward and eat yourself to death?
Oh, that's one of my favorites.
This is the Jerry Lawler Show.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Jerry Lawler Show. Thank you so much for the download. My name is Sean Reedy. As always, just to get out of the way early, you can follow us on Twitter at Lawler Show. You can follow the King at Jerry Lawler. We have a fantastic guest today who will be appearing at that 50th anniversary show coming up on September 26th. And I'm so excited about this guest today. I'm going to hand it over to the King and let him do the introduction. Jerry, can you introduce us to our guest today?
Welcome back to another edition of the Jerry Lawler Show. And this is becoming my favorite podcast of all the podcasts that I listen to. What about you, Sean?
I would agree.
Actually, this is the only podcast that I listen to, but maybe that's the reason why. But today is going to be something really, really special. I'm so excited about our guest. And as a matter of fact, it's not one of those things where he needs no introduction, but he really needs no introduction. We've got with us the incomparable superstar of one of the biggest named superstars of all time. Lex Luger is here with us today. Lex, are you on the line?
I am. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for being here. You know, I told Sean when we started doing this podcast, I hate to call people and friends and coworkers and other superstars and impose on them and ask them to take time out of their busy schedules and be on this podcast. But we got something in common that's coming up here at the end of September that I couldn't help. I had to call you and ask you because I'm so excited that you've agreed to be at, it's hard for me to say, my 50th anniversary, 50 years in the wrestling business. And we're going to have a big show in Jackson, Tennessee, September 26th. And you're one of the superstars that's going to be on hand. I'm so excited about that, Lex.
Well, I'm excited, too. I'm really, really honored to be there, actually, Jerry. And I'm never too busy and these days. And it's not an imposition at all for me to be in your show. I'm so glad you invited me on because I really am truly excited. You have no idea. I've never told you, so you wouldn't have an idea. The profound
uh-oh
influence you had on me getting into wrestling and even becoming a pro wrestler.
I had an influence on you getting into wrestling. How was that?
Huge. Well, to make a long story short, I played football one year in the United States Football League back in the almost mid-80s for the Memphis Showboats and Pepper Rogers.
Oh, my gosh.
Everywhere I went in Memphis, all I heard about was Jerry the King Lawler, the King. I go, who is this guy? And because I was a big guy, no one asked me if I was a football player. Everybody asked me if I was a pro wrestler. I go, I'm not a pro wrestler. I'm a football player. But, Jerry, that planted a seed in me to look into the pro wrestling. And within a year and a half later, I made my debut as a pro wrestler. So, really, I mean, me being in Memphis and the immense influence you had in that area – really planted a seed of interest for me. I didn't grow up watching wrestling, and that really led me to look into it and led me into becoming a professional wrestler.
Oh my gosh, I'm literally in shock hearing that.
And then Jerry, you want one other caveat to that? After I'd been wrestling for a number of years, I sustained a near fatal motorcycle wreck, and you probably maybe not even remember this. You might. Vince McMahon, when I made the switch from WCW, like in 92 or 3, into WWF, I had a near-fatal motorcycle wreck. I hadn't wrestled yet or debuted for WWF at the time, WWE now, and they sent me to wrestle with you for a match to see if I was kind of get things going again, because I hadn't had a match in over almost 2 years. I was so nervous because I had a really bad arm injury. I was very unsure of myself, and you were so good in the ring that night. You even called a press slam, which really made me nervous because the main injury, they almost amputated my arm. I said, I don't know if I can do a press slam yet. And you went up like a feather. And after that match with you, I embarked on my career, but that was a huge factor in me getting my confidence back in the ring. I never really got to thank you properly for that.
Oh my gosh. I do of course remember the match that was in 93. I think it was a tag match, wasn't it?
No, it was a singles match. I think I could be wrong. Your memory's probably better than mine.
Well, no, but definitely it's not.
That's why you're celebrating your 50th year in the ring. Your memory's way better than mine.
Well, I do remember that in 93, you and I were involved in a match. It was me and Jeff Jarrett against you and my son, Brian.
Okay, that's it. You're right. There you go.
February 22nd, 93. So before you got back with WWE.
Sean, you're on top of it, buddy.
Well, they have a site called ProWrestlingHistory.com that makes it easy.
that was your first match back after. I mean, even before you went to WWE, that was your first match back.
I was so nervous, Jerry. And when you called a press slam, my stomach almost dropped out.
Really?
Oh, yeah, because I wasn't sure about my arm. I had a steel plate in there. I had two bones sticking out from the carburetor. They were going to amputate it. I go, press slam, I don't know if I can do that. You went up like a feather. I was like, oh, my gosh. I was so relieved.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that is awesome. That's a great memory, and it brings back. I remember now when you're talking about it, I remember the interviews that we did. As a matter of fact, I saw them on YouTube just not too long ago. That you were standing out there with my son Brian, and we were talking about you being like the total package, and talking about your looks and the fabulous perfect body and the face and all of that sort of stuff. And then in the match, if you remember. I can't remember. I was trying to burn you, and you moved out of the way, and I burned Brian, I believe, or something like that with
throwing
fire.
Yeah. yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember. I saw an interview recently too. For some reason, that's crazy how that works. But before I was even knowing, I had the honor of being at your 50th celebration there in Jackson, Tennessee. And I saw the interview, and I was acting all cocky, like, oh, okay. You were playing the role of the real veteran. Then you showed me, finished the interview, and they showed a little, you said, let's see this little clip here. And you showed me, they showed you lighting people on fire. that was great. I remember that. Yeah, it's coming all back now.
Then you came back again. You were there on a night. That really made, I feel like, really made history, not only in Memphis, but in the wrestling world in general, because you were back in Memphis on a special card where Vince McMahon came all the way down to Memphis. He would never do something like that at that time. Vince came down to Memphis, and that was the start of him becoming a heel in the WWE. He came down to Memphis and was... You, as a matter of fact, were going against Yokozuna, and then Vince was there. Who was I going against, Sean? We were talking about it.
The illustrious Paul Neighbors.
Yeah, he was the one. Paul Neighbors was our referee, and Paul had, I felt like, screwed me in the match that I'd had against Bret Hart, and so all of a sudden Vince came down to be in Paul Neighbors' corner, and the interviews and the things that Vince did and made for that show in Memphis – was the start of him becoming a heel. Before that, he had just done nothing but just commentating in WWE.
Wow, we're digging up some real nuggets here, aren't we?
We are, yeah.
Wow, you know, that is great.
It's so funny because somewhere along the line, once you had started wrestling, you know, of course, I lived and stayed all the time in Memphis. And Pepper Rogers, I had a show that was on every Sunday, the Jerry Lawler Show. And I remember having Pepper Rogers on my show. He was on there a lot because Pepper was a funny guy, and he was really loved in Memphis.
Lord.
Yeah, he was really loved in Memphis. And he told me one time, he said, "I love being on your show, Jerry, because no matter how I dress, I'm always dressed better than you, and I don't have to dress up at all." So
that sounds like Pepper Rogers.
Yeah, and then here's another thing you're going to remember him by, because one day when he was on the show, he didn't realize that you had become a professional wrestler. And I told him, this was early on, this was like in the, you know, early 90s, and
right.
I told Pepper, I said, "Hey, a guy that used to play for you is starting wrestling now, Lex Luger." And of course he said, we said your real name, Larry, and he said, "Oh my gosh, well that's going to be a perfect profession for him, because when he was a football player, all he did was hold."
That's right on. That sounds like Pepper. He was a great guy to play for. I love that guy.
Oh, I know. And you know, Pepper just passed away not long ago. And
saw that.
But he was a really well known and well loved guy in Memphis.
Personality plus.
What year did you play football there in Memphis?
It was 84 or 85, I think. Almost right before I got into wrestling.
I'll be darned.
We had Reggie White on the team. We had some really good players on that team. I wasn't one of them, but we had some good players on the team. Really good.
Well, you know, Reggie White was a big wrestling fan as well. Reggie got involved with our wrestling, and he actually refereed. And it's funny because it was so, ironic when I think back about it. Reggie was refereeing one of my matches, and we were talking during the match, and I said, "Reggie's going to be so easy." He was real nervous, and of course, he's a huge guy, but what a great, likable guy. And I said, "Don't be nervous." The best thing that a referee can do is just kind of stay out of the way. We got some special spots for you and everything, but just, hey, while we're in there doing the ring, just get over in the corner and you can just stand in the corner and watch us." And he said, "Well, I don't want to, I swear I'll never forget." He said, "I can't be still very long. I can't just stand in the corner for very long or I may fall asleep."
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and you know he had that. What do you call that? Narcolepsy?
Yeah. Yep.
And I think that's basically what that contributed to the death of Reggie White. But yeah, he told me at that time that was the first I'd ever even heard of it. And he said, if I just stand still or anything, he said, I don't know what happens. He said, I just fall asleep.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, he was a super nice guy.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
This is the Jerry Lawler Show.
All right, well, let's move on. You made it on into the after that match in Memphis, man. You became the total package up in WWE, right?
Yep, I did the Narcissist, I did the Less Express, Red, White, and Blue. I went back to the Monday Night Wars and had a fifth. I only had, which is minute compared to you, Jerry, with the big 50th anniversary longevity celebration coming up. But I had a 15-year career from 86 to 01, And I got to participate in those Monday Night Wars in the late 90s. So I had I broke in with the Four Horsemen. And then I had a nice run with Lex Express and Narcissus and WB. And I was able to go back and be a integral part of the Monday Night Wars from like 95 until 01. So I enjoyed a really great period of pro wrestling for sure. I look back on it very fondly.
Oh man, you
nothing
did,
like yours though. Hey, no, by the way, I Googled Gary. A little note, you guys don't know this. I looked up before I took the call. I go 50 years ago. That's got to be up there as for longevity in wrestling. That's amazing. And I thought I might see you maybe Flair or something. But you only broke into. You're only going to be breaking into the top 10 of all time in longevity. You're going to displace Dominic DiNucci as number 10. You'll be tied with Ox Baker for 50 years.
Oh my gosh, Ox Baker was one of my all-time favorite heels. He had the perfect face for a bad guy. I'll never forget Ox Baker. And then I didn't get to work with him early on, but I did get to work with him later on and meet him and become friends with him. I used to text with Ox Baker right before he died there for a long time. But who are some of the other guys that are on that list?
Well, okay, we'll have fun with this. Number 8, you have to talk him into retiring, is Terry Funk. 6 years. Number 7
So how many years has Terry Funk been in?
No, go ahead, Jerry.
No, I was saying, does it say how many years Terry Funk has been in?
52. So you got to get him to retire to catch up to pass him by. Got to talk him into it. Good luck.
No kidding. And who else? Who's more
number
than
52? Number 7 is a tie. Milt Mascaris and Exotic Adrian Street. 53 years each.
Wow.
Then number 6, those Funk brothers, you got to talk to both of them. Dory Funk is number 6 at 54 years. And he still wrestles once in a while. So you got to talk him into retiring.
And you know, he's going to be on the show. He's going to be in Jackson as well.
I love it. Man, yeah. We got Kane, Big Papa Pump, Jim Ross. We got Sergeant Slaughter. It's going to be a great time, September 26th at the ballpark, which used to be, I saw it was Pringles Park, which is one of my favorite snacks on my treat day. But,
yeah.
Number 5 is Fabulous Moolah. And oh no, at 55 years, it's a tie. Fabulous Moolah, you're not going to believe this, Superstar Bill Dundee.
Wait a minute. You're right. He's been in the business long.
He's still going. You got to talk to him into retiring too to pass him by.
Well, I don't think I'll ever make that. That's 55 years.
Number 4 at 57 years, the tie between Johnny Saint and Bullet Barb Armstrong.
Wow.
Number 3 is, I didn't realize this. I knew he's one of the, revered. Number 3 is Lou Thesz at 58 years.
Oh man.
1932 to 1990, he wrestled.
Yeah, I wrestled Lou. That was cool. You know, I got to wrestle Lou several times when he came.
Oh, wow.
I thought it was towards the end of his career, but apparently not. He was still going to 58.
Years. His last match was in 1990. He was always dressed to the nines. I saw him in the locker room, and he always had a nice sports coat on. He was a class guy, man. I'm telling you.
Oh, my gosh. He was the biggest hands and the longest arms
of
anybody that I've ever seen. I'll never forget Jim White and I. Early on in our career in the early 70s, we got to wrestle a tag team match against Lou Thesz and Pat O'Connor. And the special referee was Jersey Joe Walcott, who used to be a world heavyweight champion boxer.
Oh, yeah, Jersey Joe. Yeah, wow.
So that was an unbelievable match that I remember with Lou Thesz. I'll never forget. I went in. Lou Thesz had Jim covered. And I went in to make the save to kick him off, and I knew I was like you in that match in Memphis. I was a nervous wreck. I went in to kick him off, and later on after the match, Jersey Joe Walcott said, "Hey kid, when you're going to kick Lou Thesz, it looked like you were kicking a keg of dynamite." So I guess I just barely touched him, and I said, "Yes, sir," because that's what I thought I was kicking.
Oh yeah, he was something else. Hey, number 2. I never get this. Gypsy Joe.
Oh my God!
He wrestled from 1961 to 2011.
Gypsy Joe was, if I got the story like you had about me, if it hadn't been for Gypsy Joe, I would have never become a wrestler. Me and my dad were going to the matches every Monday night at the Ellis Auditorium here in Memphis, and I was just in high school. And my favorite of all time, watching this guy every week, he was wrestling as a tag team. Him and Frank Martinez were the Blue Infernos. And I love those guys, and that's all I thought about. Once I saw those guys, I said, oh, my gosh, I'd love to be a wrestler. I'd love to be a mask wrestler. I'd love to be a Blue Inferno like Gypsy Joe. And I didn't know at the time that it was Gypsy Joe. I did get to meet him not long after that. And yeah, he was one of my all-time favorites.
Hey, weren't you DJing for a while right before you got into wrestling?
I did, yeah. I was a disc jockey. And you know what? It's funny.
See, that's where you got the gift of gab. There you go. You were a natural already even before you started wrestling.
Well, it's funny. I'm going to try to get back with this guy in October up in New York. But the guy that got me started in music and being a DJ, he's celebrating more than 50 years. He's still the number one DJ in New York City. His name is Scott Shannon. A lot of people, he's got a syndicated radio show. So he's been in radio probably about 55 or anyway, more years than I've been.
Oh, yeah, he's a broadcasting legend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gosh.
All right, Gypsy Joe was how many years, 59?
60 years.
Oh, gosh.
51 to 2011.
And who's number one?
Drum roll, please.
There it is.
It is Mae Young.
Oh, my gosh.
Who wasn't so young when she finished. She wrestled for 70 years. 70. And she wrestled from 1940 to 2010.
Unbelievable.
You got some work to do, King.
Hey, Mae Young was...
Her last match was 2010, a 2-on-1 no GQ handicap match against Lay Cool and Layla in WWE.
Isn't that amazing? I remember, listen, we brought Mae Young into Memphis once. This had to be in right after I'd gotten started there in the WWE. We brought Mae Young into Memphis to be, let's see, what was it? Stasiak. Stasiak, it's not easy to say. Sean Stasiak, yes. And son of Stan the Man Stasiak. We brought Sean into Memphis, and he was part of the WWE developmental guys that came down to Memphis to work, just like you did in that match. So we had Sean down there, and we had Sean trying to go after my wife at the time, which was the cat or Stacy. She was kind of just getting started, and we had Sean going after her. So we did this old soap opera bit where we brought Mae Young in as Sean's mother, and we brought her in and on the show, and she played this. She was fantastic. I mean, you know, Sean was like, Sean said, Mom, I got this new girlfriend. She's from Tennessee, and I want you to come down here and meet her. So Mae Young shows up on the show as Sean's mother. And, of course, when we brought Stacy out there to meet his mother, she was like, she's a trailer park trash, and what are you doing, Mom? You know, so it started this great rivalry that went on for weeks and everything. But I'll never forget. The first time we had her down there, we were driving. We did TV that morning, and then we drove over to Jonesboro, Arkansas, which I don't know if you ever worked Jonesboro. We went over to Jonesboro.
Oh, yeah.
We went over to Jonesboro that night, which was our Saturday night gig after TV. Mm-hmm. And as we were passing through, Mae is riding with me and Stacy, and I'll never forget, we're passing downtown, going across the Arkansas Bridge, and Mae looks over and says, oh, my gosh, there's the Peabody Hotel. And I said, yeah. And she said, here's something you'll never believe. She said, I was staying in the Peabody Hotel the night World War II broke out.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll never forget that. I said, are you serious? She said, absolutely. I just wrestled in Memphis, and I was staying at the Peabody Hotel the night World War II broke out. So that had to be what, December the 7th in what, 1942?
That's right. She was already wrestling.
Yeah, and she told me that was one of the things that she used to talk about that I remember fondly about May. She said, "I want to have a match on my 100th birthday." That was her goal in life, to wrestle until she was 100. And I don't know.
She almost made it.
You're not kidding.
She had her first tryout matches in 1939, it says here. Oh, my gosh. She wrestled till 2010.
That is unbelievable.
Wow. So you see, Jerry, we're celebrating your longevity of 50 years, but you're still just a little kid. You got a lot of years left, buddy.
Well, you know what? Now I feel better about this show.
Yeah.
I was feeling like I was almost ashamed to admit the fact that I've been around in wrestling for 50 years. But now when you mentioned this list of all-stars here that's ahead of me, it makes me feel proud, actually.
You're just a little punk kid on that list, Jerry.
Well, I guess you're right.
Snot-nosed kids.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing. Mae Young, Gypsy Joe, Luke Thez, Bob Armstrong, Bill Dundee, Fabulous Moolah, Dory Funk, Adrian Street, Mil Mascaras, Terry Funk. What a list.
Are amongst quite the list of luminaries now.
Man, you're not kidding. That's
Jerry amazing. The King Lawler.
Well, Lick, I'm so glad you did. You did something for this show and for me that I would have never even thought about doing, that you Googled that and found out who's been in
Jerry,
the long time.
When I looked at that list, I was fascinated. I just did it on a whim. I'd never done that in my entire life. I was like, wow. It just like blew me away. I was fascinated by it.
Well, I'm fascinated right now. I've written it down over here. I'm gonna have to look it up and read all about it. Well, I don't have to read about it anyway. I've wrestled almost every single one of them. So
that is incredible.
I think I have wrestled every single one of them.
That is amazing. You've had an amazing career, which brings us back to the Jackson, Tennessee, at the ballpark, September 26th. That's going to be a great event. I heard that's quite the facility.
It is. It's a beautiful ballpark. It looks like a Major League Baseball stadium. It's called the ballpark at Jackson. You're right. It used to be called Pringles Park, and it's been the minor league home of, I think right now, the Jackson Generals play there, and they're the Seattle Mariners farm club. But it used to be the Minnesota Twins farm club. But it's a great facility, and we're going to be able to. We're talking now already. I think they said it's going to have to be some social distancing and mask worn, that sort of
right.
stuff.
But outdoors, which is good.
Yeah, it's going to be outdoors, which is going to be great. And I think by the time September 26 rolls around, they're probably going to be able to up the attendance. I'm hoping to 3,000 fans. Right now it's at almost 2,000. So and the tickets are almost all sold out already. And it's going to be an unbelievable night.
I'm really looking forward to it. I haven't seen you in a long time, Jerry, and seeing the rest of the guys and the fans there. That's going to be a really exciting event. I am really looking forward to it. I'm so honored to be there, Jerry. I really am.
Well, Lex, my gosh, thank you so much for being there. And I mean, let's continue on, because there are a lot of people. I mean, I'm one of them. A lot of people wonder, you know, where you've been, what you've been doing, what's a typical day like now for Lex Luger, and you know, what have you been doing since? Oh gosh, like I said, the last time I saw you and last time we actually spoke, I believe was, I don't remember how long ago, but it was at a Comic Con or one of those conventions.
Yeah, just for a brief, because we're both busy doing what we were doing there. Just kind of a hello and how you doing and that kind of thing. Yeah, but these days I'm like everybody with the temporary COVID, hopefully temporary, very temporary COVID. We're doing everything on Zoom, and I'm glad we're going to start doing some of these live events like September 26th again. I miss doing the live events. It's just not the same doing everything by virtual. And I've been doing some of that. And I also I am now talking about from a heart of stone atheist. I'm an ordained minister now, Terry, I'm an evangelist.
Oh, kidding.
So normally, on weekends and stuff, I do a lot of that. I didn't get to interact with a lot of the guys in the past number of years, so I'm normally speaking at churches and faith-based events on weekends. And I love being able to do some of the wrestling events here and there. I mix them in. But normally, non-COVID, I'm usually at home with I'm looking after my mom, who I'm so thankful is still here. She's 87 years old, and precious time with mom. And then during the weekend, on the weekends, I usually was traveling, usually doing some kind of a faith-based event, usually, and then mixing in some of the wrestling, like, for instance, on September 26th. That keeps me just as busy as I'd like to be these days. So yeah, my health is real good. I know people always ask me about my health because I had that spinal cord injury, but I use assistive devices most of the time for safety, but I can God's done a miracle in that. I was never supposed to be able to, you know, do anything from the neck down. I can stand and walk and live independently. So life is really good. I'm very, very thankful, Jerry. Thank you for asking. That is amazing.
What year did you have the neck injury? Like for a while, I mean, you were completely paralyzed, weren't you? And a lot of people thought that
that was the prognosis from all the top neurologists, that I'd be in one of those power chairs and have really no function from the neck down. So to be able to drive and on my own car with no assistive devices in my car and do what I do. Yeah, that was back in 08.
Wow.
And my recovery, although not full, my partial recovery defied what all doctors thought would ever have been possible. They believe it's a miracle as well. So God is good.
Well, you're exactly right. That's amazing. I mean, that's maybe the comeback story of a lifetime. Well, maybe the one where I died on TV and came back.
I was about to say, you got one that's up there.
So yes. You're right. We both have had some near misses, and you're right. God has certainly good, and the prayers and everything. I know that was one of the things that when after I had the cardiac arrest and everything, it was amazing of how many people I heard from and how many people told me these heartfelt stories of how it affected them and how they were praying for me. I even had people tell me that, you know, that night when they went, after they took me off the TV, that people said, some person told me that I went and got down on my hands and knees and put my hands on the television screen and was praying out loud and sort of stuff. And I know you had the same situation because, the fans and the people's prayers were so powerful for you and I.
Absolutely. So powerful. And, I really believe you've been through some things as well, and God moves us on through it and to the other side of it, and we're thankful for all the, because we got wrestling fans are the greatest, Jerry, I know you'll agree, and boy, when there's some real prayer warriors out there, when something happens to one of us, it's we're really like a family. I didn't realize at the time when I wrestled, I was a different kind of guy back then, more just focused on me, but now that I've got a whole new perspective on life, and on the wrestling business, I'd like to become a huge wrestling fan now. And we're like a family. And when something that happens to one of us, the comfort they give us and the prayers, and it's very uplifting, isn't it?
Oh, without a doubt, it's absolutely amazing. And it's something, like you said, that while we're doing this and while we're in this business, it's something that it's so easy to take for granted. I mean, you get to a point that you're so focused and so have such tunnel vision on what you're doing and the matches and your own career that it's easy to block the fans out. And sometimes it's almost like the fans become a distraction, but we both need to remind all these young wrestlers, all these superstars of today, don't ever let that happen. Always be cognizant of the fans. And that's one of the things that I can remember. I've had people ask me, throughout my career, and especially the early days before I got to the WWE, that was people would say things like, you know, what were you thinking during a match? And I would always answer, and this was the truth. I was always thinking about what the fans were liking or what they weren't thinking about the match. And I think if these young guys go through a match thinking, what the fans are going to like or what they are enjoying about the match or whatever, you're always going to have a good match.
You know, to punctuate what my agreement with that, Jerry, I used to go to the Madison Square Garden. I was with WWE, and I always saw Vince standing at the curtain. And I find out, I go, why do you always stand at the curtain? You're watching a match. He goes, well, I like to watch the match. My dad always stood here. And he goes, I like to gauge the crowd. He was sure. All about the fans. When guys walk to and from the ring, I want to see how the crowd reacts and responds to them. And then I saw Ric Flair doing the same thing when I broke in with the Horsemen back in the late 80s. And Rick always watched earlier matches. And I'm brand new. I don't know anything. I said, Rick, why do you always stand out here instead of hang out in the locker room while us, you're out here watching the matches? Rick goes, I want to see what the fans, remember what the guys in the earlier matches are doing, so I don't repeat it necessarily. But he says, I like to gauge what the crowd's buying into. He said, I like to see what they're buying tonight. What's the temperament of the crowd? Because I like to take the temperature of the crowd, he said.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, you're not going to get any better advice from any better superstar than Ric Flair. I mean, he was always amazing, and you're right. That was so important, and it's something that really a lot of stars or a lot of young wrestlers haven't learned to do that yet. But that's so important, so good. Don't ever forget the fans.
That's right. For psychology of the match itself, like you come back to the same city, sometimes they're in a different mood that night. They want to see something different. You have to be able to adjust because we're there for them. I mean, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have a career in wrestling because they're the ones who watch us and really make things go around. I had it backwards. I thought they were there for me instead of us being there for them a good part of my career. So I had it all backwards. It's a miracle I maybe made a living at it.
Well, you know what? It's funny. Once again, you say God has a plan for everything and everybody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was part of his plan for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, man, listen.
I'm glad he gives us a different perspective on things. It puts us in he's put me in a much better place.
Well, listen, Lex, I have certainly enjoyed having you here today. I mean, you have made I've had a smile on my face during this entire podcast, and
I have too. I've been laughing and smiling. I've had great fun, Jerry. I really look forward to seeing you on the 26th September 26th. That's going to be a great event. I'm so glad to be a part of it, Jerry.
Well, we are so certainly glad to have you there. Once again, Lex Luger, everybody, you can see him in person. Come and meet the guy, get autographed, take pictures with him, everything there at the ballpark in Jackson, Tennessee on September 26th, Saturday, September 26th. And Lex, as soon as I get there, man, I'm gonna hunt you down and give you a big hug, okay?
Man, I can't wait. Jerry, Sean, thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it. It's a real pleasure.
All right. Thanks so much, Lex.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And KingJerryLawler.com and Twitter is @JerryLawler.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and we'll talk to everybody next week.